Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to Pod on the Tyne. It's Monday, October 2nd. My name's Taylor Payne and I'm joined by Messrs. Colkin and Whitehead. How the devil are you, George Colkin? Have you had a good weekend?
Yes, I have had a good weekend, thank you. Yeah, nice to be good. Back at St. James's again. And then I had a nice pint at the Free Trade in the last of summer on Sunday afternoon.
Saw your picture, it was lovely.
Yeah, beautiful. What a place, what a pub. So yeah, seen the best of Newcastle.
Brilliant stuff. And Jacob Whitehead, how are you? You all right?
I am excellent. Would like to thank everyone for their kind messages after I made George the cup of tea that set social media on fire.
I've had a terrible weekend. Now that I remember, go back to that cup of tea, I've had to drink myself to oblivion to forget that.
Was that tea, was it? I thought it was just off milk.
I could not bring myself to taste that. It was repulsive. It was an affront.
Yes, you might have liked it.
It was an affront to...
These youngins, George, they don't know that tea needs to be strong enough so that you can stand a spoon up in it before you put the milk in.
Then a cup of tea needs to be the colour of David Dickinson.
Absolutely.
I don't know who David Dickinson is. Of course you don't. But
mahogany.
My defence is that I didn't actually do the brew. It was out one of those big vats.
You served it.
And it was so weak when it came out that I added a teaspoon of milk.
You served it to me.
Well, I offered you a nice herbal tea like I was going to have, and you said absolutely not.
You offered me lemon and ginger tea. That's not herbal.
Well, is that or decaf?
Well, so. Yeah.
George, I would suggest that your pint in the Free Trade was probably milkier than your tea.
It was actually quite a milky pint. Yeah, it was a bit of a cloudy pint. I'm not sure about the wisdom of that, but that made up for it. How about you?
Oh, I'm marvellous, mate. Absolutely wonderful. Went to the game on Saturday. Had a lovely old time. I want to crack on, though, because we've got lots to get through.
We do.
What's the sexiest two-word phrase in football, Jacob?
I've got two nominations for this. The first one is double pivot.
No, sexiest.
Who do you think you are, Chris Wolf? That was going to be my answer for him.
Yeah, well, I'm just trying to channel his spirit in his absence.
For Chris, it was either double pivot or double sausage.
Large hot dog.
Large hot dog.
And my other nomination, hopefully bridging the gaps between Everton and Newcastle, is Big Dunk.
Oh, nice. Yeah. More menacing than sexy, that though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Depends what gets you, Taylor.
It's definitely not Duncan Ferguson. No, that's a really, really peculiar and also quite troubling choice from Jacob. I mean, it has to just be Callum Wilson, doesn't it? If we're talking about players, the sexiest two-word phrase in football, Callum Wilson.
Yeah, I mean, you've gone the same direction. I was going to go with Fabian Scher, but fair enough. I mean, it's a toss-up, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Either, yeah.
Or if you're a Tottenham Hotspur fan this weekend, I would dare say it's possibly Czech complete. Anyway, let's move on. Well, it's actually, the right answer to this is it's actually routine win, a phrase that wasn't required in these parts for a long, long time, but definitely applies to this game. Burnley may be the most capable of the Premier League's new boys, but they've had a tough start of their campaign and they couldn't cope with Eddie Howe's clean sheet mags on Saturday. Jake, it was a routine win for sure, wasn't it? But the game actually started with a very good chance for Burnley, didn't it?
Yes, it did. It was dead weird, actually, having a 3 o'clock kickoff for the first time all year and then just sort of utter normalcy in the performance. But yeah, really good chance for Burnley to start. And it was slightly weird because the Sheffield United game also began with Sheffield United starting the better before Newcastle have roared back in both. But on this occasion, it was Kolasinac turning Dan Burn early and cutting it back. And it was a really impressive save from Pope to keep it level.
It was.
Because we're sort of relishing now how routine it was. It would have been completely different if Burnley went ahead after 10 minutes, sort of under company. They're sort of very solid defensively. They are good at sitting back deep, as well as this new expansive style of football, which he's starting to implement. So a bullet dodged for Newcastle early on.
Yeah, big chance that, George, wasn't it? And a great save from Pope. The game could have been completely different from there on out.
Yeah, you never know. You never know. By the end, you just sort of think, well, that is the most routine win performance that you could have imagined. I would have still backed Newcastle to have found a way through against that opposition, because I didn't think they were very good, but they were very solid. Newcastle were, and good to start thinking about Newcastle again in those terms, because even if you go back to Brentford, it felt pretty nervy in terms of needing to get that win, needing to turn around the start of the season. But we're now back in that position where sort of going to St James's, expecting them to be okay, and they were indeed okay.
Absolutely. Let's talk about Miguel Almiron's left foot, Jacob. Why not? A moment of magic, wasn't it? Eddie Howe said, reminiscent of some of his goals last season, which is absolutely right. Let's just say, thank God Chris Woff's not here to posit another one of his ridiculous theories about what he was actually trying to do. Probably thought it was a cross.
Yeah, I mean, maybe when he did that little shoulder dip just to send the defender, he sort of actually thought that he was trying to sort of go over easily for a foul or something. I don't know what he'd have thought, but it was nice. It has such dip on it, the shot. It was one where it looked as if it was going to go clear of Trafford's bar and sort of ended up, like, it wasn't top corner because it dipped so much. It was quite weird.
I was right behind it where I was sat as well, and oh, the view I got of it was beautiful. It just sort of faded ever so slightly. It was great.
Yeah, I mean, it was an absolutely fantastic finish. Have to pay tribute, though, to Kieran Trippier in the build-up, because obviously it needed, I mean, it was a sensational finish kind of from nowhere, but Trippier winning the ball from Aaron Ramsey, just a brilliant piece of work from him.
Yeah.
And then set Almiron free. But it's, as with much about the Newcastle team, it's that sort of graft that is the architect of the best things they do. And they repeatedly force Burnley into making mistakes, which is what they do when they're at their best.
I really enjoyed that Trippier managed to win the ball, make that tackle while appealing for a handball at the same time. He was sort of contorting himself in this double. Maybe we should try more of that. Maybe playing with one arm in the air is sort of how he's really at his best, apart from in his own penalty area.
Here comes a Jacob Whitehead theory. Footballers should all play with one arm in the air. I mean, I think that's what the handball rule is designed to rule out, however.
Alan Shearer liked to go for it after scoring, just sort of do it permanently.
Already have the hand in the end, then score. They might as well just already have it up there, yeah. Fair play. After that goal, though, there wasn't much doubt of the result, really, was there? More case of how many chances we could convert. And Elliot Anderson, again, George, desperately unlucky in front of goal. Bless the lad, he hasn't got his goal yet, has he, in a Newcastle shirt? But it was a fabulous save by the goalkeeper. It's a shame he didn't put it in.
It was a great diving header. And again, I would pay tribute to Anderson. I thought he had a fine match, but it was a beautiful ball in from Sean Longstaff, and I definitely want to pay tribute to Sean. You know, we've seen the results since he's come back into the team. He was the one that missed out at the start of the season when Sandro Tonali played. Obviously, Sean had that bit of a niggling injury over the summer and wasn't fully fit. But he is just so important to the way Newcastle play. He has that energy. He has the drive. He does the running for that midfield. Bruno immediately looks more comfortable, looks better. It gives him license to do what he can do. And again, I thought Bruno was very good as well at the weekend.
He was.
Sean is such an underrated player, but he is just vital to the way Newcastle tick. And that was a beautiful cross for Anderson. And yeah, he's having absolutely no luck in front of the goal, poor lad, but it will come, won't it?
He's doing the right things. I mean, that finish, he puts it back across the goalkeeper. It's heading back to the corner, and it's just a really good instinctive stop with the legs. I mean, if you keep doing those stuff, the goals will come.
Yeah, I thought he was great, actually. I thought the entire midfield played really well against Burnley, but I thought Elliot Anderson covered some ground along with Sean Longstaff, allowing Bruno to just sit in there and do the things that he does well. And it's nice to see him as well, George, isn't it? Bruno playing with a bit of swagger, playing with a bit of confidence again, a couple of little flicks, and he was, you know, doing the same things as what he was doing against Sheffield United, a couple of nutmegs here and there. It's just lovely to see, isn't it? That's the Bruno we want on the pitch.
Yeah, he looks like he's had a sort of load lifted off his shoulder. Obviously, we know he was playing with an injury for a long time, certainly was last season. But no, this is the Bruno we know and love. Obviously, the contract thing has been kind of hanging about. That's all sorted. It's just they're just waiting for the announcement now. I mean, that's good. Whether that's been you know, affecting him at all mentally or not, I don't know. But it's a big deal, that kind of thing, when you've got things about your working life hanging over you. You know, I think we've all been there. You know, you can't help but sort of think about it. But yeah, absolutely integral. I mean, when Bruno plays well, Newcastle play well. It's as simple as that.
There's one ball to Isak where he was almost facing the east stand directly and just clips it around the corner down the channel, and Isak really should have I think it would have been doubling the lead at that point, is where he sort of contorts his body and just rolls it wide.
His first touch let him down a little bit there, didn't it? His first touch just took slightly a bit too close to the goalkeeper and he couldn't finish it off.
But it's the way that Guimarães doesn't need to be necessarily facing the play to kind of really do his stuff. He's kind of able to play with his peripheral vision so much when he's on form, and it's such a confidence thing to be able to do, to be able to see those sorts of passes almost on instinct rather than kind of fully conceptualizing them.
I actually watched the match cam, the match cam that the club put out on YouTube. I watched it last night, and there was a moment in the second half when Bruno breaks forward with the ball. And it's the one when he plays like a lovely through ball through to Tonali. But he's running forwards and you would think he's looking ahead. But as he's running with the ball, his head is just swiveling back and forwards, looking for who's available, where the pass is. And yeah, just it was like watching an owl. His head was just like, it was almost a 360, just spinning round and round. And you just look and you think, my God, he's just switched on. He knows where every single player is and where they need to be. And then the ball to Tonali was absolutely perfect.
Brown owl. Yeah. Brown owl Grimoris. Brunel.
Good, yeah. Not your best, but good.
No, I'll work on that.
Yeah, come back in about 20 minutes. We'll have another
20 years, I'll come back with that. I might have got that one nailed.
See if you can coin it as the sexiest two-word phrase of football.
Yeah.
Brown owl gamer.
It wasn't great, come on. No. Let's forget that.
Anthony Gordon, Jacob, we'll come to you as our resident Anthony Gordon expert. He wins another penalty, doesn't he? He's so good at that, getting his body across people and just inviting them to make fouls.
Exactly. What Gordon is really good at, and it doesn't initially always seem as a skill, but he's really good at capitalising on other people's mistakes as well.
Yeah.
And it's not just that they're, you can't just necessarily profit that down to luck. It's the fact that he's putting an element of pressure on them and then he's positioning himself well enough to actually get to the ball. So it happened against Liverpool when he kind of capitalised on the Trent Alexander-Arnold mistake, and again here when Alderweireld, it's a poor header back, but Gordon is so on his toes, ready to do it. And it's the fact that he's always offering himself to make those runs, do those sprints. He's obviously not always been fit enough to play 90 minutes, but some of that is because he almost just tries so many things. He goes down so many blind alleys in hopes of good things happening, and eventually sometimes they do. And this is a perfect example of it. And yeah, here again, he just manages to get his foot in front of it. Live, when I first saw it, I wasn't actually sure that it was a penalty. Watched it back and you do see that, yes, he does tackle him. He goes through it. It is a penalty. But it just shows how good he is at almost just making that late movement just to draw the foul.
Just before the tackle comes in, he just leans ever so slightly, doesn't he, allowing the defender to kind of just go through him. But yeah, brilliant bit of play.
Shearer always talks about that, making those runs. You know, you make 100 runs in the course of a match and only one, you know, will only one work out for you in terms of getting the ball or getting that little bit of luck, but you've got to do it to be there. And no, totally agree with Jacob about that. And he is just absolutely on fire, isn't he? I mean, talk there about other players playing well, but he is really driving the team at the minute. He just looks absolutely electric. It's a big blow to lose Harvey Barnes, and obviously there are other injuries around the squad at the moment, but you just have to keep everything crossed that he stays okay, because he's just so important to the not just the tempo of the team, but the way they're getting results. He's absolutely brilliant.
I think it's just so important to stress that in the context of his career, he's never had this sort of run of games in a team doing well in the same position.
Yeah.
And just to see what he can do when, I think he started every game but one, and in that game he came on for Harvey Barnes after 10-15 minutes. The fact that this trust has been put in him and he's actually got this run of games, which he's needed for two or three seasons, with these clear tactical instructions, which he spent time getting grips to, this is the payoff of that. That's why you make that investment and have to give players time, that run in the side. It's the perfect example.
Totally, totally. I agree with that, except I would say I think that slightly doesn't do him enough justice, because I think he's really dragged Newcastle into form. I mean, I think it's really been his performances that have been the consistent thing about this season. I mean, he's been the player that's been playing well all the way through, including that sort of difficult start. I think sort of others have risen have risen to his level. I mean, so, yeah, but he has. He's just been absolutely sensational.
He has. And another goal for Alexander Isak as well, the coolest man north of Antarctica with that penalty, Jacob, wasn't he? He basically had a bit of help from Bruno, who took the ball and got rid of a few players and then handed it off, and Isak just slotted it home, a nice, easy finish.
Another animal parallel for Bruno here. Like, as well as being an owl, he was nodding the ball on his head like a sea lion in front of Gallagher while sort of waiting for it. Kind of so nonchalant. And then, yeah, Isak just made it look so simple. Trafford, obviously good at saving penalties. In the summer, the Euro under-21s final, he saved one in the last minute to win it for England. But so calm here, just put it on the other end. And I saw a stat at the weekend that Newcastle have the second longest run in the Premier League of scoring penalties consecutively. So I think they had 13 and Wolves have something like 18. So Newcastle, good at penalties.
Thanks for absolutely ruining
that
stat. Yeah, great. So Newcastle get awarded penalties against PSG and miss them all. Brilliant. Thanks, Jacob. Fucking brilliant.
Premier League. So anything which happens against PSG,
I don't care. You've just ruined everything. But on the subject of people ruining things, Taylor... I have to bring this up. I do have to bring this up, and I do.
Come on, then.
I'm slightly sort of apologetic, but you posting, I was in a good position to see Isak's goal celebration at the weekend.
Yeah,
with a bit of film that you took. I mean, you have become you're now a phone wanker. You're a football phone wanker.
Well,
you're one of those people who, instead of watching football, watch football through a phone, and that makes you the worst of the worst, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, it would have been the case if I had my phone in my hand, but it was actually my girlfriend had her phone out and she was videoing the penalty. I was stood there with my hands over my face like I normally do when Newcastle get a penalty. And I did have a good view because I was stood next to her. So that's all that is, George. So don't worry about it. I'm still as good a fan as anybody who doesn't use their phone. It's all fine.
This is a statement read on behalf of George Culkin of The Athletic. He would like to unreservedly apologise to Taylor's partner for any offence that may have been caused over the previous 2 minutes. They'll be taking no further questions at this time.
Thanks for that. Lovely stuff. Jacob, Newcastle's fullbacks, after seeing their theoretical long-term successes in the Carabao Cup, the men in possession showed exactly what they're made of, didn't they? Dan Byrne and Kieran Trippier, again, pretty good on the ball, very good going forward. They've been great the last couple of weeks.
Exactly. This was my match piece from the weekend, and I think the point I was making is that when you spend nearly $70 million on two young players, both hugely talented, the future tends to become the present pretty quickly when we're in that position. And you saw how well Livramento played on Wednesday night.
Yeah, yeah. He was
yet great. You've got Trippier playing at this level. So both Trippier and Byrne have career-high passing statistics. Trippier has 4 assists in the last 2 games. He had 28 more touches than any other player on the pitch against Burnley. For a right-back to have those sorts of numbers is absolutely crazy. Sometimes it's centre-back, sometimes it's number 6, sometimes it's even a goalkeeper. A right-back to be that central to everything. But kind of that said, it's pretty difficult to probably be Dan Byrne on the other side and always sort of have these comparisons. And really lucky, actually, George had a chat with Dan after the game and spoke about his role, because his passing numbers are higher than they've ever been before, which is saying something, seeing as he's played left-sided centre-back in a Brighton system, he's played left-back in this Hull team for quite a while. And to hear in terms of completion percentage, the numbers he's trying, the progressive distance of that passing, all better. And we had a chat about that. And he's talking about how his role in build-up play is different to Trippier. He often might have to stay back and lock out as they move up down the right-hand side. But he was also talking about his partnership with Gordon, because they've both been elevating each other. And one really interesting thing where he was talking about a run which they like to link up on, which they've called the Arsenal one, after a movement which Bukayo Saka makes where he picks up the ball wide and cuts inside, and they've really linked up with that a lot, and it's really sort of helped Gordon get to that cutting in line, which he really likes, for that sort of goal he scored against Sheffield United. So a really good example.
It was a long busting run from Dan Byrne on that goal, wasn't it? He covered so much ground.
So yeah, I mean, just the fact that they've had not been questioned, but they've had this pressure come in from behind them, and the fact that they've responded so well. And while the midfield was gelling, it was actually those two have been responsible for ball progression, for keeping Newcastle's attacking shape. Really impressive from both of them.
Something I asked Dan about was his ability to adapt during matches as well, which I think is something very important. I mean, we saw in the first few minutes, Koliosho at Burnley down the right, kind of beat him once and he slipped a second time. Now, he said very openly, I don't think I had a very good first half. And in the past, you know, that would have affected him. In the past, that would have meant him having a bad game. What he's really good at is adapting to the winger that's in front of him or the circumstances. Because, you know, I knew Jacob was doing this piece. And by the end of the game, you're actually saying, okay, we're not talking about Koliosho anymore, are we? We're talking about a clean sheet for Newcastle. And suddenly that threat has been negated. And I think he is very, very good at A, bouncing back, and B, working out what's happening in a match and dealing with it. The whole team are, you know, the whole team are very good at adapting. And Byrne is a leader in the team. He's a talker and he can see, you know, he was talking a lot to Gordon, telling him where to go, where to be. And they did then close off that side. It's very, very, you know, it's very impressive. If you're comparing Dan to Kieran Trippier, it's very unfair because you're talking about, you know, an absolutely world-class attacking fullback and Dan isn't that. I mean, you know, naturally he's a centre half. But as Jacob says, it's if you do have one fullback who's bombing on, sometimes you have to, you know, the other fullback has to lock off that bit of the pitch so that Newcastle are not exposed. And it's also a different sort of set of circumstances when he's got Gordon kind of rampaging in front of him, the way that he's able to sort of be that solid wall behind him.
Yeah.
I love both fullbacks. And again, I think we have to pay tribute to the back four, back five. That's what now, 5 clean sheets in a row. Whoever's played, Jamal Lascelles, that was his first Premier League appearances for a long time. Absolutely well done to him. And then another feature of the match, I thought the weekend, was Fabian Schär's, those beautiful diagonal passes. When he's in that form, it's beautiful to watch. The way he's able to pick out Almiron on the side or pick out Trippier on the wing, it's so important. That range of passing that he's got. Botman is going to be a big loss to the team, but they've adapted really well and they have that kind of sense of solidity again back to the back line, which is really great to see.
Absolutely. Newcastle up to 8th in the Premier League and just 6 points off the top spot. And really the only black mark that we can say is, as you mentioned, George's Sven Botman's absence. And also Joe Linton, of course, bless him, came on, was on the pitch for a few minutes and then had to go off. Now facing a bit of a spell on the sidelines. And the immediate outlook for those lads isn't great, is it?
No, it's not. How, without giving any sort of confirmation on Joe Linton, sort of, you could tell from his body language that it didn't look great.
Yeah.
Botman's, he's ruled out until after the international break, although he does say there's a chance that Wilson will be back from his own hamstring injury potentially before. So that's a piece of good news. And after the international break, we're also hopefully getting back Joe Willock, who so often goes under the radar, kind of forget how central he was last year. So prognosis for the next week, not great. Lots of losses in midfield, but after the international break, Newcastle could well be back stronger than they are even right now.
Right then, let's move on.
Come on, you Maggies.
Famously nestled in the West Midlands near Sutton Coalfield, Boldmere St Michael's hosted Newcastle United women's team in the FAWNL second round and they gave us a real fright. Took an injury time winner from substitute Bridget Galloway to see us through. And next up, a trip to Liverpool Feds, the team who pipped us to the title 2 seasons ago. It was a bit of a feisty affair, this one, Jacob, wasn't it? It all kicked off at the end.
You really got your money's worth here. Newcastle, they've been sweeping all ahead of them in their league. And yet this was a team from the tier below and they really did make quite hard work of it. It was a really physical, feisty game. There's one point, I think 3 Boldmere players were all sort of down with Newcastle players bombing around them. They hit the post early, couldn't get ahead and Boldmere got ahead for a really scrappy goal and it looked like a bit of a cup set for a bit before Cara Milne-Redhead hit an absolute screamer from a corner. If you haven't seen it, I'd implore you to get on watch it. It gets cut back to her and she absolutely wallops it in. And then last minute, Bridget Galloway, 7th goal from 5 games. Another one, really kind of scrappy, but in. Clever little flicked header. Late red card from Boldmere led to an amazing display of finger pointing from the Boldmere bench, which again is really worth watching. Liverpool feds at the weekend to, as you said, Taylor, pipped Newcastle a couple of seasons ago. They're actually on the same points in the league this year, but Newcastle have played two fewer games as a result of postponements. They're still the only unbeaten team in the division. So, yeah, exciting times ahead for Becky Langley's team.
Absolutely. A bit of everything, George, wasn't there? Bridget Galloway with another goal, late winner, a dog in the crowd. Oh, my God, did this match had everything. People in the sin bin, substitutes being sent off.
Yeah, it's been such a strange season with the postponements that Jacob talked about, only playing those three league games. They're not playing at home again, I don't think, until the middle of the month. I'll go and see them then. I'm really looking forward to it. It just feels like it's been a kind of weird season. And I think with that disruption, obviously, they've done really, really well in order to keep churning those results out. So, yeah, brilliant. Well done. It's been a really solid start to the season for them in spite of all that disruption. So, yeah, let's hope they can carry that on. Big game at the weekend.
Definitely. Right, then let's move on, chaps. Why don't you subscribe to The Athletic via theathletic.com/Newcastle Pod and pay just £1 or $1 a month for the first 12 months, depending on where you are located. We'll be back in just a tick to talk about that Paris Saint-Germain game with Pete Rutzler. See you tomorrow.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So Champions League football returns to St James's Park for the first time since March 2003. Barcelona ran out 2-0 winners on that occasion, and Paris Saint-Germain were well on their way to 11th place in Ligue 1. It's a bit different now though, isn't it? PSG is such a big deal that The Athletic have dedicated a reporter to them, and he joins us now. Please welcome the artist formerly known as Rutzler the Relegator. It's Pete Rutzler. How are you doing, Pete?
That'd be quite something if it still applied in Ligue 1 as well.
Absolutely.
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Good stuff. Well, what sort of shape of PSG in at the minute? Domestic results are a bit of a mixed bag, aren't they?
Yeah, it's actually been their worst start since the Qatari takeover more than a decade ago in Ligue 1. So in terms of results, it's not been great, but there's been a lot of change in Paris over the summer. It's been billed as a new era, and it certainly looks like that in terms of personnel. You know, Neymar's gone, Lionel Messi's gone, and in have come a swathe of new players, more than €300 million committed to spending over the summer. And Luis Enrique has been brought in to oversee this mix of players and younger talent as they try to embark on a reboot, which ultimately probably has the same goal, which is to try and win that Champions League. So it's in the league, it's been those early teething problems. But we've seen signs of a team that are now starting to click it in moments. You can see the direction of travel that they're going in. They actually have a quite clear playing identity now. You can see that the first signs of that coming to the fore, and that feels new. The atmosphere's pretty together on and off the pitch, which is also new, certainly compared to a few months ago where they were booing title winners. So it's a new direction, and it's going to be very interesting to see how they fare in the Champions League. And we saw them defeat Dortmund in the first game, and they look very, very impressive. So a new look, a new feel, but still with familiar threats as well.
That front three are terrifying, I have to be honest. Kylian Mbappe, Colomwani and Dembele. It's a potent attacking trio, isn't it? Are the problems in the team elsewhere?
To be honest, it's the way Luis Enrique has the team playing. You know, he's very much a possession-based style of play. We've seen them really dominate the ball for extensive periods. And then it's about trying to be incisive in the final third. So there is an element of it, of them struggling in front of goal. I think there's also this sense of them still adapting to each other, that those early periods of acclimatizing to one another. But as you say, the players that they have at their disposal in attack are frightening. You know, it's France is from three. That's a World Cup winning, World Cup final, sorry, reaching potential of a van three. So, you know, the quality is there. I think what we've seen, and as we saw at the weekend against Clermont, is that when they face a team that's sitting in a low block, they can struggle. It's about trying to find ways where they can still score goals and still get results and not have this set formula where they struggle. You know, Luis Enrique's Spain teams at their best were incredible, the way they could decide through opponents. But then towards the end, as we saw in the World Cup, they could become unstuck when a team sits very deep. So it's in that early stages. I don't think there's any sort of worry at the moment because there's so much change. But I think once it starts to come together, and we have seen that in a couple of performances. I mentioned Dortmund, but then also against Marseille, where they scored an early goal. And then afterwards, it looked frightening. It's not just the front three that can score. You've got Achraf Hakimi, who's just been liberated at right back, has a completely free role now in this sort of advanced position. And so, yeah, there's more than just the front three to look out for.
What's kind of the mood in Paris about this game? I guess since PSG's takeover, Newcastle have not been a particularly good side. It's only in the last year or two, obviously, that they've started to rapidly improve. This is almost a bit of a novelty opponent for PSG. Kind of, what's the attitude towards Newcastle?
I think there's a bit of excitement towards it. You know, Newcastle, I think they've been watched from afar in terms of how the takeover and the project has changed so dramatically for the club. I think in terms of the game itself, I think there's an awareness that this is a massive game for Newcastle returning to the Champions League, what that will bring on the field, and also recognition that, you know, Newcastle qualified for the Champions League last year. They're not in the Premier League. It's not going to be an easy game. The group itself, more broadly, is seen as a difficult group, particularly for a team that's in transition. So it's certainly not taken lightly. I mean, the conversations after Clermont were, you know, are the players, have we got one eye on Newcastle next week? You know, he rotated his midfield. So Manuel Ugarte and Warren Zaïre-Emery, the young 17-year-old who's been absolutely fantastic. Both of them were rested. So the question is, you know, you're resting for Newcastle. So I don't think there's a sense of, you know, taking it lightly. I think there's very much an anticipation for playing, and the Champions League is, you know, it's massive in Paris, and I know they've had their league struggles in the early part of the season, but for so long it's the Champions League that matters and so much revolves around it.
So you've gone from Rutsch the relegator to Pete the Parisian. What a gig that must be. What's it like covering PSG? It must be a big change in your life, and also, you know, what's it just like hanging around a club like that?
Yeah, I went out there for the end of last season, and I think even within that, The period I've been covering PSG has been some massive changes. The end of last season was absolutely crazy. So for those that weren't aware, you had Lionel Messi being suspended over an unauthorized trip to Saudi Arabia. You had the manager being caught up in a racism scandal with his former club Nice. You had Kylian Mbappe complaining about a marketing campaign that the club had done internally, and it just felt like week after week there was something else. And this was a team, you know, that went on to win the league. There were fan protests outside Neymar's house, and Neymar had been injured for months. It was a very disconnected feel. And over the summer, there has been a great deal of change, as I was talking about. You know, they've opened a fantastic new training ground, cost them 300 million euros. It's taken a long time to come to fruition, but it, compared to the Camp de Loge, where they were before, this is night and day. So it actually feels more like a super club now. So, I mean, even in that time, it's been a lot of change. It's a different scale to Fulham, and obviously I'm still keeping my eye on Fulham and still doing that. I've got Fulham Chelsea later, so it's quite an interesting contrast doing the two. So, but yeah, I mean, I think it really just for me anyway, it's been interesting looking at that change at PSG and what they're trying to do. You know, they always talk about new era, and it's quite an interesting thing, because you can say we're going to start again, we're going to reset, and it's quite a good way of buying maybe ownership time, but by buying people time, you know, for when you don't quite achieve the goals you wanted to. But there has been that big change. Messi's gone, Neymar's gone, yeah, so many players. It's massive.
Just listening to all that, I mean, it's kind of weird. I mean, obviously there are kind of huge parallels between the two clubs in terms of ownership, but that is such a different feel to the club that Newcastle is. Obviously, they want to be the kind of team and club that's challenging for the league title, that's challenging for the Champions League. They've signposted all that themselves. So that's sort of the club they want to be, with a fantastic training ground. But the key to Newcastle's success has been that sense of unity and everybody being on the same page, whether it's on the pitch, to the boardroom, to the stands. It's, I mean, just hearing you sort of read all that out kind of brings it back home, just how separate those clubs are in terms of their own experience at the minute.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's sort of taken PSG a decade to come back to the unity point. I mean, maybe that's a bit harsh. I think the last 6 years in particular, since the Neymar transfer, you know, it's become much more of a individual players, less of a team identity, of a, you know, a place where managers go in, talk about trying to reset, you know, some big managers as well, Richard Pochettino, Thomas Tuchel, Unai Emery, you know, managers have come in with ideas to want to really change the direction of the team and put their mark on it and end up caught up in the politics of it all. And I think they want to sort of move away from that. Now, whether that's possible with PSG, we'll have to see. But you're right. I mean, the direction these project with that kind of backing can go is varied. I mean, I think that you contrast it with Manchester City, slightly longer time period than PSG, but got their training ground much earlier and have done pretty well. So if you wanted to take lessons from PSG about what can go well and what can go wrong, because on another side, you could go, well, the major signings that they have made have transformed them as a global brand. You've got stores across America. You've got a store in Oxford Street now. Like their link up with Jordan. Like these kind of things have been really transformational for a club that sure has had incredible amounts of money pumped into it. But that doesn't necessarily mean you've become a brand outside of football. You know, separate to all the noise and everything I've just listed, they're still really popular. And you still have kids wearing PSG shirts these days. So a very interesting project, I think, to compare to, and particularly as Newcastle move forward.
Jacob, here's a little question for you as well. Newcastle, we've played 5 games in 15 days. We've come away with 4 wins, stayed unbeaten, and conceded 0 goals. And yet fans are still probably a mix of excited and nervous about this game, aren't they? I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, I don't know how you couldn't go into this without that sort of nervous energy, that sense of anticipation. Because, yes, Newcastle have gone into this with this excellent form, but they're playing an absolute buzzsaw of a team who do have the potential to embarrass teams. Like, saw how well they played against Dortmund. This is what, you know, Newcastle is still getting used to playing against this caliber of opponent twice a week, or pretty much every week. It's going to be a 6th game in 19 days by the time it actually comes about. PSG are used to that. Newcastle aren't. Yes, we know this team have the potential within them to produce these startling results, especially at home. And I'm sure we'll come on to the atmosphere of that. But if you don't go into this with anticipation, not just for the match itself, but what the match kind of means to the city itself, the kind of hope that symbolises the journey which the club's been on over the last, not just 2 years, but the last 20 years since the last Champions League game. This is, in a way, the completion of that cycle. Of course, you're going to go into it with some kind of feeling of nerves. George will be able to probably describe that far better than me.
It's anticipation. I don't feel nervous at all. No, I don't feel like that. I feel really excited. I think, having been in the away end at Milan, I think what immediately hit me was A, the atmosphere in the San Siro, and B, how different the Champions League was. Funny, watching the Champions League from a distance, seeing other English teams in it over the years, you kind of get jaded to it and it's always the same teams playing each other. But actually being there and experiencing it was to feel how different those games were, and the noise and the smells and the atmosphere.
Yeah.
I can't wait for Wednesday, because I think it's Newcastle's most high-profile occasion in terms of home matches for 20 years. Obviously, there's been big, big games in the past, but those big games in Newcastle's recent history have been about avoiding relegation. It's been that sort of match. They've had some great results. And then obviously last season we saw a taste, having the League Cup semi-final at St James's. That was absolutely massive. But in terms of the sort of stature of a game and the occasion in that sense, this blows everything else out of the water. And it's new. It's new for the team. It's new for fans. It's new for everybody. And, you know, having PSG fans around the city over the next couple of days is going to be great. And it's just such a such a big thing, and it's such a sort of thrill to have that. I mean, I just think it's going to be unreal. I mean, there have been times in the past year, 2 years, when the noise at St. James's has been so loud, you can't hear yourself think, I can't wait for Pete to experience it this week. I think it's going to be incredible. It's something that I spoke to Sean Longstaff about after the game. I wanted to talk a little bit about Milan. I did a bit of that, and I've written a piece about the whole thing, which is up on The Athletic now. But I asked him, is there a better atmosphere anywhere in Europe than St James's Park at the moment?
No, I don't think there is, especially when it's on a nighttime game under the lights. It's just sort of a special place, and like I said, I can't wait for Wednesday. It's probably going to be like the semi-final last year, but on steroids, I would say. And like I said, I honestly can't wait for it. Even walking around there, I was speaking about the goalie coach and just said this place is going to be absolutely pouncing on Wednesday. And to be honest, it's funny because obviously if we go away and play in an atmosphere, then it's sometimes, send your mind a little bit everywhere, and there's so much going on, and it can be tough. And when teams come here, it's sort of, I'd say it's like that times 10. So whatever we feel when we go away, I'd imagine other teams are feeling a lot worse when they come here and the crowd's into it, and you sort of just feel smothered. And like you see on Wednesday in the cup when we got off the city, the crowd responded, and it sort of works both ways. If we feed them and then they create an atmosphere, and we can then kick on again. And I think when it's bouncing, there's nowhere better to play.
Peter, is it fair to say that there's a bit of pressure on PSG, isn't there? Some of their exits in Europe over the last few years as well. It's caused a bit of uproar. What's the feeling like there at the minute?
Yeah, it always does. You know, the Champions League has been and continues to be everything for the Paris Saint-Germain, I think. I mean, even just thinking of last season and the positivity that there was before the World Cup. They came back after the World Cup. There were injuries ahead of their last 16 tie against Bayern Munich. And suddenly they'd go out and everything falls apart, probably the most spectacular way yet. What's been interesting again is that you have this real push and desire to talk about the long-term younger players, like Kang In Lee, who's 22, Manuel Ugarte, who's 22, Gonzalo Ramos, similar age. And they're trying to go, well, we're building for the long-term now. You had Nasser Al-Khelaifi come out just last month saying, we're not obsessed with the Champions League, you know, this is longer-term. Which feels a bit like an about turn, but once the competition gets going, once things start to tick over, those conversations happen again, and it will be, you know, the defining factor for Luis Enrique. That's inevitable. And just because it is, you know, they've been so dominant in Liga, you know, they've now won more titles than anyone else in France after last year. So for them, it's the place they want to be. It's the place they can really show off what they're trying to do. And there is this element of how much time are they going to get? What is everyone buying into this idea that there's a longer term perspective now? And at the moment, it feels like there is. There's this kind of unity which hasn't really been seen for quite some time, where you have the fans really supporting with the players. The players are evidently younger. It's a younger group. You know, there's a coach coming in, and you can see what he's trying to do, but it's going to take a bit of time. You've got the president saying, you know, this is not about short-termism anymore. You know, the stars have gone. Let's see how long that all holds together. And it's nights like Wednesday where, you know, things go very wrong. then
fingers crossed.
Well, yeah, exactly. And then that's when perspectives can change. So it will be interesting. But that whether this dynamic changes is a really interesting element of this season.
So one thing that Newcastle have had, even during the sort of difficult moments of the past decade, is they've tended to have a really, really good French player playing for them. And back in the day, Newcastle United hosted a French day at St. James's Park because they had all those French players or French speakers at the time, which was quite funny. We've got, you know, a far more exciting French day to look forward to on Wednesday with PSG there. Something that, you know, one of those players and something that the two teams have in common now, of course, is Johan Cabaye, a brilliant, gifted midfield player who played for Alan Pardew's team at the high watermark of the Ashley era, which wasn't saying very much, by the way. But when they finished fifth and got into Europe, he was a big part of it, left the club in quite difficult circumstances, has a relationship with PSG, played for PSG, and is there now, Pete. And we're doing a piece that people can see on The Athletic on Wednesday, in which you've spoken to him. Give us a little bit of insight into what, I mean, I can assure everybody that Johan won't know what's hit him when he sees the club on Wednesday and how different it is. But what's he up to at PSG now?
Johan Kabay is now their assistant director of the academy, which is no small role considering the amount of talent that exists in and around Paris. You know, I think for the World Cup, there were, I think, 11 members of that squad who grew up within 15 miles of Paris. And I know Oliver Cave wrote a really excellent piece on that relatively recently. So his role is to sort of nurture the talent, bring that talent in, work with families, with agents, and cement a pathway, which is not the easiest pathway, in my opinion. You know, PSG, with the talent that they have in their first team, it's not easy to push these younger players and get them in front of eyeballs. But that they have been able to do, not just in terms of, you know, Pranav Kimpembe, but I mentioned Warren Zaïre-Emery. I'm sure we'll see him on Wednesday, a 17-year-old who's gone straight into the first team and been almost ever present. And I think for him, I think his sort of long-term trajectory is to go down a more management sort of role rather than a coaching role. So sporting director type role is, I think, his direction of travel. So he obviously played for PSG after Newcastle, has that connection there, and was brought to the club by their former sporting director, Leonardo. And I think it's actually quite an interesting moment for their academy anyway, because of the new training ground. You know, they're all going to be on the same site for the very first time, both the men's senior team, the youth teams, and also the women's team as well. So it's should be a very interesting period. And for him, it's quite a challenge. It's quite a challenge considering what the requirements are to get into that first team.
Lovely stuff. Right, then make sure you check out that piece from George and Pete about Johan Kabay. Pete, thanks very much for your time, mate.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Cheers for coming on.
Au revoir et à bientôt, Pete.
Very good. Very good, George.
Merci.
See you on Wednesday.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Well, there we go, chaps. Thank you very much to Pete Rutzler for his time. Lovely stuff. I'll tell you what, though, if there's one game that you want to get to early, get into your seat, it's going to be this one, isn't it, George? We've had a little tweet from Dan Talk Sport, and he says, if it's not too late, can you mention getting to the ground early on Wednesday? I know fans shouldn't have to do it, but hate the idea of our biggest home game in years being harmed by people stuck outside. If anyone can be there early, it will help those who can't get in. It's fair enough, isn't it? I mean, you've got to be in your seat for this one. I'm going to be absolutely buzzing for this game on Wednesday.
Well, I'm there now. I mean, I'm already in my seat. I'm really excited because I'm in my season ticket seat for this one. And yeah, really, really, really excited. I mean, we've just had Pete on there. He's like dedicated. He's a brilliant journalist. He's fantastic. And he's like sort of talking about the ins and outs of PSG and what they're doing. It's like, oh, I just want to shout, PSG are coming to St. James's Park and we're going to batter them.
Really can't wait to see how George is on Thursday morning after the 60-hour lead up to kickoff. It's pure intensity and rage. Well,
I know it's like it is such a cliche, and it's like it's such a kind of cliche to be asking players about the atmosphere and things like that. But then when I do think about those moments we've had since the takeover, whether it was the Spurs game, the first game post takeover, yeah, some of those occasions where honestly moisture is just forced out of your body in lots of orifices, whether it's your eyes and other bits, because of the noise. I mean, just because of the noise.
Yeah.
I'm really pleased that you are not sitting next to me.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
In the press box after that revelation.
I'll be wearing an adult nappy.
Oh, man.
Five different types of goo emanating from George by the time it reached 15 minutes.
That's the atmosphere that I want it to be. I mean, I mentioned AC Milan when we were talking to Pete.
Yeah.
The kind of surprising thing, something actually that Sean talked about, or Dan talked about, was that sort of throb of atmosphere that there was at the San Siro, this kind of underlying hum and buzz and noise where you couldn't hear yourself think. And I absolutely had that in the away end. The away end before the game, first bit of the game, was really, really loud. But all the way through, there was this noise that meant you couldn't hear the person sitting next to you.
Yeah.
And I've got it in my head that St. James's Park is going to be absolutely the most vibrant, noisy place that it possibly can be. I think it will.
Yeah.
And I think if it is, then the players will respond to it. At its best, I mentioned the Spurs game. In that Spurs game, Tottenham came back and, you know, won that match. And in the end, it wasn't much of a context because Newcastle was shit then, but they're not shit now. They're really good. And, I just want the people watching on to sort of understand about the atmosphere that there is at Newcastle at the moment, because, I just think it's going to be immense.
It's like, yes, the Premier League's the biggest league in the world, but the amount of new eyeballs which are going to be on Newcastle here from across Europe as a result of this game being at St. James's Park, it's not just kind of an advert or a window into Newcastle United, the club, but also kind of Newcastle, the city, kind of showing the depth of passion, the football heritage, all of that on display against Paris. That's a really exciting aspect of
it. It's totally different. I mean, that's the thing. As I said before, it's like I feel quite jaded about the Champions League in terms of watching it over the past 20 years. But being there and being part of it, you suddenly remember how different it is, the styles, the you know, all the different sort of atmospheres and teams and blah, blah, blah. It's, it's brilliant. Bring it on. Bring it on.
Well, I've got tickets for myself and my eldest. We're going to go, but he doesn't know that he's going.
Oh, amazing.
So I'm going to pick him up from school, and then I'm going to tell him we're just going to go and watch the match in the house and see, and just get him home, get him settled, and then say, right, get your coat on, we're going to the game.
Brilliant.
I can't wait to see his face. He's absolutely, I mean, he's gutted that we aren't able to go. That's what he thinks.
Yeah.
So his little head's going to explode when he realises he's going. So,
Are you going to be recording this like you record penalties?
No. Definitely not. Definitely not.
Phone wanker.
That's enough of chippiness from you, Jacob Whitehead.
Sounds like time to piss off.
Tell you what, I'll take a video the next time you make a cup of tea. How does that sound?
Oh, God. Nobody wants to see that.
It'll be like a deleted scene from MasterChef. It'll be great.
Absolutely. Right then, let's finish off, chaps. Thanks a lot for your time. Get in touch. We're all on Twitter. We're easy to find. The show is at podonthetyne, or you can email us at podonthetyne@theathletic.com. Thanks a lot, George.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Can't wait. Can't wait for Thursday's show to go through Newcastle's 5-0 defeat to Paris Saint-Germain.
Now,
come on. In front
of
a crowd of 20,000 because everybody else is locked outside.
Come on now. That's enough of that.
I don't think that's going to happen. Can't wait.
And thank you for your time, Jacob Whitehead.
Thank you very much. You just see their window into how hard George is to deal with, lurching from that optimism to pessimism.
I'm a Newcastle fan. I don't know what to do.
How on earth can you manage a personality like that?
I don't know what to do.
In the course of your normal professional life.
I can't. I don't negotiate it. I don't know what to do. I don't know who to live. How to live. I don't know who I am. And I
thought you said who to lick.
I thought you said that as well.
If Newcastle win on... No, I probably shouldn't say it.
Don't finish that sentence. For the love of God, don't finish that sentence.
Prayers to the people who are sitting next to him on Wednesday. And if you listen to this and have any anecdotes, please get in touch.
Yeah, absolutely. Right then, Newcastle United against Paris Saint-Germain on Wednesday night. We are through the looking glass, chaps, aren't we? I think it's fair to say. Thank you very much for listening. This has been Pod on the Tyne. Have a good week, and we shall speak to you on the other side of that massive game. Thanks a lot. Take care. Goodbye. And the right answer to this is it's actually routine win. Actually, the right answer, chaps, is routine win. Vocabulary.
No, you can't.
Actually, chaps, the right answer is routine win, a phrase that wasn't required in these parts.
After the game, and we wrote about this about Dansburn.
Yeah,
about Dansburn. Sounds like a sort of minor river in sort of
Germany. Western Germany.
Yeah,
Dansburn.
Spoke about his role.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.